throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Monday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We've got all kinds of basketball stuff to talk about as we'll wrap up the high school season. Obviously, the number one topic, the Merritt Oilerettes' third state championship in school history. First time in 44 years, dating back all the way to the year I was born in 1980. So we'll discuss Merritt's run. Beating number two on Friday, number one on Saturday, the late game strategy, man, it was just for a low scoring game, one of the lowest scoring title games we've ever seen. It was so intense because it did feel like if someone could just make a three, you know what I mean? Like if anybody can make a three, that might be the difference in Marley Mung was that person that was able to do that. So we're going to talk a lot of Merritt. Obviously, at the top of the show, the other finals were very, very interesting. I'm sure Weatherford is sick to their stomachs about the way that game transpired. Looked like they had a 48-32 lead in the third quarter, everything kind of going right, and then all of a sudden it just kind of collapsed, and they blew a 7-point lead in the fourth quarter. End up losing to overtime to Douglas, so second straight year in just agonizing, heartbreaking fashion that they lose in the finals to the Douglas Trojans. Forsyth, he went out with a bang. Like I said, he'd get 40. He only got 36. Just because, you know, you said even in the morning session how big the crowd was. Then you started seeing, you know, during that Weatherford game, any timeout, they would go around. And, I mean, it looked like there were very few seats to be had in the big house all the way to the rafters. Yeah. And so with him on that stage, I had a feeling. And sure enough, he was good. Bethany went back to back. Also, you know what works in high school just like it does in college?
What's that?
Transfer portal.
Well, yeah.
Yep. One team especially. I don't know if you saw this. In 5A boys, Midwest City.
I thought you were going to go back to Douglas.
No. Midwest City. I mean, Douglas won the title last year. Yeah, they got a huge transfer, no doubt. Yeah. But a lot different story for Midwest City. They got a big transfer, at least one as well. And the drastic difference between last year and this year is pretty amazing. So that's kind of what we got. Also, we have a new sponsor on board that we'll tell you about as well. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. That is 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things. Whatever else might be on your mind, feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to KADSAM.com or download the app. The app has it all. It's got the radio stations. It's got the Penny News and then Big Elk and Paragon TV in there as well, where you have all those high school games at your fingertips on your phone, and the Skinny on Sports podcast. If you missed the show entirely, you can check it out anywhere where podcasts drop. How are you today, Jared?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Ready for it to warm back up. I think it's going to for the first few days, and then by the next weekend, kind of back riding the roller coaster of the early spring, right?
I think we got rain chances towards the end of the week too.
That's when I read the cool down. On Friday, when I read the weather, it seemed like Wednesday night, almost exactly like last week. Wednesday night into Thursday, I don't know if we may see any snow flurries like they thought we might see last week. I don't know if it's going to get quite that cold, but yeah, it's that pattern of warm then cool off. We're getting close, I think. And you can always have early April to mid-April freeze type event. But I do think we're getting close to being on the downside of the winter times and on the upside of the spring. Trees are blooming. Grass is about to start growing. It's lovely. Can't wait.
I got the sprinkler out yesterday. I finally got my lawn sprayed, so I need to get some water on it. I didn't want to wait till a potential rain at the end of the week or not, so I was starting to move the sprinkler around. I was trying to get that spring feeling. Hung out in the garage a lot yesterday with the door up, trying to clean it up a little bit. Yeah, took advantage of the extra hour of sunlight. And, yeah, I got a nap in, too. Yeah. I was a little tired. I'd just been worn out. all this back and forth to the city. But it's been worth it, man. I saw a lot of good games.
All right, let's talk about Saturday. The Oilerettes of Merit. Well, let's go back to Friday because I think a lot of people saw, and when Merit fans and others saw Riverside on Thursday, or on Wednesday, I guess, in the first round, saw them play exceptionally well and were nervous or even, I wasn't scared, but just thought, uh-oh, this might be the end of the line. This is why you listen to me. I tried to tell everybody this 2 months ago when I saw them, that they are not some unbeatable juggernaut. They can absolutely, you can force them into bad things. And I think that's exactly what Merit did. They didn't panic. There was one little stretch, kind of mid-first or early second quarter, where Riverside hit a couple of threes, but Merit didn't panic. They didn't, you know, a lot of times when that happens, then the wave comes. You turn it over a few times now. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got all the confidence in the world at that point. Merit didn't panic. They still ran what they ran, got it across, you know, and didn't feed into that run. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Didn't just they didn't never force
things.
Well, they didn't, never yeah. really they never gave any they never fueled Riverside's fire by turning it over, speeding the game up, and really getting, you know, the Braves in transition.
Yeah.
In order to kind of help them, because once you if you get them slowed down in the half court, they're just like a lot of teams. It's hard to score in the half court against Merritt's defense. We obviously saw that on Saturday because they kind of force you to take the shots they want you to take. And so that was a surprise to a bunch of people, probably how bad or how the margin ended up. But for me, I was on that. I've been trying to beat that drum the whole time that they are, you know, and that turned out to be the case. Then on there was no doubt in my mind,
well,
Saturday was going
to
be a bloodbath.
Yeah, Riverside, real quick. The good thing I think about them winning the way they did in their opening round game, it maybe got Merritt's attention. Like, listen, we got to play really good against this team, as opposed to if they won by maybe a buzzer beating bucket and go, oh wow, well they're beatable. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I think there's one every. Okay, so my judgment was formed on one game. I think everyone else's judgment was formed on one game too, without even seeing it and without even knowing what happened.
Yeah,
and that was beating Sealing.
Not even
in the first round state game. It was beating Sealing the way they did, and not really having any context into what happened,
mm-hmm.
and just looking at final score and going, "Holy cow!" Hey, which I get it. To beat that team by that many, it's a huge accomplishment. There's no doubt about that. No matter how the game went, but then once you figure out. Yeah, well, Sealing didn't throw it in the ocean. 0 of 25 from three. Well, you know that's a way more of an anomaly than Riverside, you know, being that much better than Sealing, what have you. But and then Saturday, we talked about it Friday. If no matter who won that game on Friday between Merritt and Riverside, it was going to be a battle with Dale in the finals because of what Dale is able to do defensively as well. And I think you saw it throughout the entirety of that game. Nobody really ever got until the end when Marley was wide open, you know, knocking down that three on the left wing. But it just didn't seem – it seemed like throughout the game, and I'm sure both coaches might agree with this, even on the open looks that the other teams got, it was the person that maybe the defensive team was wanting to shoot it. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
There was a reason why that person was that open. If you know, and
dare
and,
you to shoot it. Yeah.
And playing the percentages for certain people to have to beat you. You know, I know Coach Doherty talked in the first game on the sideline before it with Pecola. We're not letting Alyssa Parker beat us.
Yeah.
Double zero. We're not going to do it. And I think that's both defenses on Saturday had that same kind of theory. As far as not letting your best players, the other team's best players beat you, and I think that's why we got what we got, because maybe some of the people that weren't used to scoring were asked to score on that stage in that moment, and it's just hard to do.
Yeah, it is. Not for Marley Lung, though, hitting those two threes. But, yeah, it was a good defensive effort. And I said it as the game went on, and as close and tight as it was, I thought, you know, I don't mean this in a mean way because you ask any Merritt fan, they'll say, that wasn't an upset. And I agree with them. They played. They were the best team, but they were the underdog. Mm-hmm. Let's face it. They were the underdog going up against the defending champs. So my thought was, if you want to pull off the upset, beat the favorite team, you want to try to keep it as close as you can, as long as you can, and that starts on the defensive end, and it was masterful. It was masterful how they played them defensively, in my opinion. I thought, you keep this as close and tight as it possibly can be, and then the results could come out in your favor. When you get it as close and tight as possible as could be, around the 90-second mark, one-minute mark, well, then you see what happens. You know, Mung was open, hit the shot, hit the big three. They played great defense even after that to prevent even them to even get a shot off, which was great. I'm thinking, okay, you got to, you know, they're going to be so tough to get down and or to stop, and they, it was awesome. And we're about to talk about the late game decisions there, which I thought was great.
Yeah, so after the call was made on the one drive, with what, like 10 seconds left, when Merritt took the charge there.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, Dale only had committed two team fouls as well. So I thought the late game execution, everyone, you kind of take it for granted until you don't, inbounding the basketball. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw just a couple of years ago, an inbound play lost the state title for Hammond.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah. It, in that same situation. And for Merritt, with 10.7 seconds left, to inbound it three different times in order for Mung to get fouled, then she misses the two free throws. The only part of the late game execution that wasn't perfect was that, where she wasn't able to seal it from the free throw line. But when she didn't, I thought, you know, obviously, Dale gets the ball to call timeout immediately because it's probably easier in Eric's mind to set up something from the baseline to get going than trying to do it in the moment, right? Mm-hmm. Just grab a rebound, try to find some, who do I need to outlet to? There's time's wasting, don't pan, you know. So I understand why he called the timeout when he did, to try to get everybody set. I wonder if he realized the fouls at the time. Because I wonder if he did, would he do that over again? Just say, you know what, play it out. That way they can't kind of, during that timeout, talk about what the strategy was.
Did you see the interview with one of the players? I think it was Hartman.
Oh, I know it's Hartman. I'm going to get there. Oh,
okay,
yeah, I know
ahead.
Exactly.
Go ahead. No, okay.
But I'm
okay.
Talking about from the Dale side.
Okay.
If Eric had to do it over again when they grabbed the rebound off the missed free throw, would he have just let it play out instead of calling the timeout to set something up for his girls and then allowing that conversation to happen in the Merritt huddle? Because, there's 6.7 maybe or something like that?
Yeah.
Or was it cleared down to 4?
It was
it may have been 4.8. Anyways, but the point is, in the huddle, Hartman, they're kind of talking what to do, and she said, "We've only got two fouls. We've only got two team fouls. We should foul." According to Coach Doherty,
yeah,
who's relaying the story, and then of course Hartman gets interviewed as well. But the presence of mind for a young lady like in that moment to think about that. I mean, I was screaming at the TV, but I was, you know what I'm saying? I had plenty of time to think about it, right?
Yeah,
I wasn't
yeah.
on the floor. And not only to think about it and then to execute that sequence the way they did, they didn't rush the fouls. It was nice for Dale to be in the backcourt. That way you really weren't worried about a shooting foul,
right,
because
right.
they weren't going to jack it from
three-quarter
court.
Maybe let them dribble it a couple
exactly,
times.
Exactly, especially that first time, where they inbounded it from the baseline, they let him get a little bit closer to half court before they fouled, just to waste a little bit more time. And then, of course, the next time they throw it in, and because of where they inbounded it, they kind of had that luxury again to let it go, to let it play just an extra click before you foul. And then all of a sudden it's 0.6 left on the clock, still inbounding from the other side of the half-court line, because Dale was never able to get it even across the half-court line. I thought that the presence of mind to think of that strategy in the moment and employ it, that you think inbounding it three different times in order to get fouled, and then the foul strategy on the defensive end once the free throws were missed, incredible, incredible late game execution by the Oilerettes.
Yeah. And they're rewarded for it. It was awesome. I'm trying to think of anything else to add to that. Not really. What was crazy was the three-point shooting was just off, frankly, for both teams, but not when it mattered for, obviously, Merritt. And my personal player of the game was Marley Mung, right? Just the – I mean, the ice in her veins making that shot. She played so cool and collected. And what's so cool about that, because I'm asked – you know, obviously, I'm not familiar with Merritt outside of when I called their games – you know, and then just checking their scores every night and how they're doing. But I was so taken back, like, wait a minute. I was asking the guys, like, okay, your seniors, who are they? And then I didn't hear Mung's name.
No, she's sophomore.
Just a sophomore. Talk about a budding star right there.
Yeah, and personally for her, she lost her granddad since Christmas.
Oh, darn.
During the season. And so I'm sure even as she was shooting that three-pointer, if it wouldn't have been online, I think Keith might have moved the basket. Kind of like Angels in the Outfield. Remember that movie where it was going in from above? But no,
well, that just makes it
just an awesome, awesome deal.
Yeah, that's just so cool. I mean, easy to root for, right? That team's easy to root for. They a lot of good kids on that team and just fun to watch. Their reaction to it and it's how you want a team – to play, because everybody was involved in this game, in this tournament run some way, somehow, whether it be Hartman stepping up or, like we just talked about, Mung. I mean, on the defensive side, Porter having to do what she does and, you know, maybe not scoring a lot, but, man, she's a definite impact on the other side. It's a team that they're going to remember for a long, long time.
Yeah, that's – I'd written down, you know, Hartman was double figures every game of the state tournament, 2019 and 11. Mung with 10, 21 and 10 – in the semifinal win over Riverside in a double-double, then, of course, the 8 points and the state title clinching shot, as it were. And Porter defensively, stout. She
took a couple charges, yeah, Porter did.
And she, the thing, she's not overly tall, but she is overly strong. And so she's able to, because of her strength, she's able to be down in the paint against those post players, kind of rooting them out. You know what I'm saying? She is able to be able – she's able to play post defense with her strength and not necessarily her height, if that makes sense, because she's, you know, no one's going to just push her around.
No.
You know, Stoutwood makes three, you know, Carnes, you heard her name a bunch off the bench with Smith, man, they you're right. Everyone played their role to perfection. Absolutely to perfection.
What you want as a team. There's no me's, you know. Sometimes there's really special players on teams. You want them to take over, you know. But this was a team that it was a team effort. Good job, Coach Doherty. Man, I mean, speaking of which, Coach Doherty, supposed to be just a stopgap, just a bridge between the old coach and the new coach. He comes in, steps in, guides them all the way to a state title. They're not going to let him let that go.
Yeah, I know.
We kind of jokingly said that when we had him in here a few weeks ago or before the playoffs started, and I'm serious. They're not going to let him let that job go. He's got it going on there. They got great assistants there. That's a special team. It's going to be really, really – it's going to be interesting to see how it continues. We mentioned some of those seniors that move on, but Mung's still there. You know, they're probably too early to talk about next year, but still kind of relishing in this one right now. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and maybe the youngest – assistant coach in the state, Jared's daughter down there. You'll have to go back. They put a camera on her, Gray.
Oh yeah.
I can't remember. It was in the fourth quarter, and she comes out of the huddle, you know, and she grabs a clipboard, and she's like, I mean, I'm talking about like everybody's watching her.
Yeah.
As she's kind of looking at it, like, okay, what do you think? And then she hands it back down. It was awesome. It was like everyone was really like, okay, what's her opinion? I want to know what you think.
I got
about
a bone to pick with Jared.
Uh-oh.
He needs to check his phone during games. I was texting him, hey, you need to calm down over there. This was on Friday. He was a little he was getting a little rowdy over there. I mean, who they were all getting rowdy. The Merritt fans showed up, man. They showed up.
Yeah.
It was massive. I took a cool video. I put it on our Skinny on Sports when they won it.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of glancing down the fans on the floor, and it went crazy.
You had to
wrong phone.
Did you see?
He's saying I text the wrong phone.
Did you happen to see the jacket that Possum's aunt had? Debbie?
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know who that was. Yeah. But she was right in front of us on, it was on Saturday. Like right on the floor in front of us.
Yeah. She had it was a 1980. The last time they won it, it was like a state tournament winning jacket or
that
whatever.
Was cool.
That was pretty awesome. I saw her post it after the win on Friday, like just a picture of it. And then there she was wearing it up at the big house on Saturday. That was just, I mean, it. You know,
and it still fit her.
Yeah. Congratulations there. That would not be the case for me. I promise you if I had something like that.
Yeah, it is.
But it was kind of it was such a weird year all the way back down to Class A and B last week because it seemed like either you got another one for somebody, Ceiling,
yeah,
LaMega, you know, Douglas, Bethany, you know, and all that. Or it was like the first time in forever or the first time ever, you know, with all these state, with the champions, it seemed like it was one or the other. There wasn't much in between. It was the new kid on the block or, yeah, guess what? They won it again. And it doesn't necessarily always happen like that, right?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you see a team coming, and they've kind of struggled. You know, Okarchi might be in that way, but heck, they hadn't won it since 1970. You know, and Merritt's
which is crazy.
I think the Merritt girls are a little bit that way too, though, because this wasn't a Wilson Henrietta that nobody even knew there was a school, and they show up and win.
Yeah.
You know, Merritt had been in the state tournament 2 years ago. You know, last year went the way it went at the end and not able to get through in the two games of area. But everyone knew this team coming into the season was one of the teams that would be competing to get into the state tournament and then, depending on their development, maybe win it, maybe have a chance to win. So it wasn't like a shocker.
No, no.
But it had just been a long time.
Yeah, the expectation was to get to the state tournament.
Oh, 100%.
Based off of last year's results, who they had coming back, who their coach is. Everybody said, listen, it's state or bust. I mean, not even just Merritt fans. You and me, we were like, hey, if we're, you know, we did that at the beginning of the season. Like,
yeah,
okay,
the floor for them was just getting to the state tournament.
Right. So, and then, I wonder how much, and I'd love, I mean, I'm sure once this all calms down, we'll give Coach Doherty a call, see if he wants to talk to us. But I wonder how much that loss in the area championship game, you know, what direction it took them, obviously in a good direction, but, you know, kind of like I thought to myself, oh no, here we go again, when they lost that game and then they had to go into the consolation game. And I thought, here we go again. And they got over that. So I'd love to get some insight on all that stuff in this state tournament run. But yeah, it was state or bust. And sometimes, I mean, I think of it, I've tried to be more level headed with my teams and stuff. Like, you know, when you get the state, whatever happens is a bonus. I mean, there are a lot of teams that just want to punch a ticket, you know, so whatever happens is a bonus. And then when you get to Saturday, it's like, man, whatever happens, you're coming home with something. I mean, that is a bonus. It's a boon for your program. And this is huge for the Merritt program and huge for Western Oklahoma basketball, in my opinion, because now everyone's going to look at Merritt next year and go, oh, that's the team. That's the cream of the crop right there. Makes everybody better. Congratulations to Merritt. That is so cool.
Yeah, to your point. I mean, I think that there are levels. You know, there's teams that are, like you said, they get there and they love to be there, and it was a struggle to get there, and they really don't have much chance to win. And then there's also some years there's just one that's, if they don't win, it's shocking. I think you're looking at that ceiling.
Yeah.
Would be that type of team. And then there is in the middle where, you know what? We're good enough to win. Can we make the plays? Can the ball bounce the right way for us as we're there? So, and they were definitely one of those teams all year long.
And I think it's a great testament to anybody who makes the championship game and you think you're the underdog. Hey, anything can happen. I mean, the other team could not hit a three, or you can play some masterful defense. I mean, you just want to be, and that's a thing I always say too, you want to be in that game no matter what the outcome is. But for mainly the purpose of giving yourself an opportunity to win a championship. And they took that opportunity and ran with it.
They definitely did. Now, I'm sure there was a bunch of people watching this game all over town. I know I saw multiple different places say, you know, they had it, they were going to have the game on. You know where one of those was?
Where was that?
Our newest addition to the show, our friends down at Boomtown Grill. What a perfect spot it would have been on Saturday to watch the Oilerettes capture the state title at Boomtown Grill. There's something for everyone on the menu at Boomtown. Steak, chicken, seafood. They're sure to have something to satisfy your cravings. Me personally, I love the nachos, the chicken nachos as an appetizer. You can't go wrong with the pizza, the wings, mango habanero for me. On Thursdays, we'll tell you the 50-cent boneless chicken wings on Thursdays. Boomtown Grill, 12 big screen TVs, happy hour 2 to 6, Monday through Friday, appetizers and drink specials as well. We appreciate Daryl Kelly and all the folks down at Boomtown Grill. Newest group to hop aboard here on the Skinny on Sports. Good stuff.
Love it.
Yeah, one of the advantages to not being at the big house and being at Boomtown Grill would have been get a little nervous. A little adult bev in your hand.
Or celebrating afterwards.
Yeah, no doubt. Don't forget, it's conference championship, it's conference tournament week, I guess, for the bigger schools in the NCAA. We have our Skinny on Sports Bracket Challenge, Western Oklahoma Realty Bracket Challenge. The group is made on the ESPN website. I sent out a link last week on our Skinny on Sports Facebook page. I'll do that again today. That way you can just click that link and it'll take you right there. You can get your entry in, and then when Selection Sunday rolls around here at the end of this week, you can start picking your bracket. Prize package is going to be awesome. I'll tell you what that is as we get a little bit closer. But appreciate Tyler and Robbie and all the gang at Western Oklahoma Realty. People before property is their motto. It's the group motto that you'll see there on the ESPN website. So come play along. It's going to be an awesome prize or prizes for whoever is able to win the bracket challenge. It's hard to believe, but here we are already to March Madness, man. High school basketball is over. March Madness is set to kick off. It's a pretty awesome week. You got the Players' Championship in the PGA Tour, conference tournaments. You know what else starts? Spring football gets cranked up in this state, and some Bedlam baseball this week as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so we've got it's pretty cool. Pretty cool week ahead. All right, let's talk about the rest of the day on Saturday. Obviously, Saturday night, we talked about it as soon as we saw the brackets, how hard it was going to be to get in. You had to be early to get there in that second session Saturday at the Big House because of the star power that was the Weatherford-Douglas game that was a possibility that obviously came to fruition. And then Ida Bell and Washington and the 3A girls. And then obviously Dayton Forsyth to finish it. And the Dale Pirates that we're looking for three in a row. Let's start with the first one. Man, Weatherford, 2 years in a row, just absolute heartbreak on state championship Saturday. Last year, you know, Jackson Smith almost with the game-winning three, just wouldn't stay down. And I'm sure a lot of this year and a lot of the motivation for the Weatherford Eagles came from that loss a year ago. I'm sure they loved and relished the chance to be back on that stage, but not only back on that stage against the same team that beat them a year ago. I mean, that was one of the beauties of both of them getting in the front door of the state tournament was it kept them on opposite sides of the bracket as number one and number two. And everything worked out exactly how I'm sure they always envisioned it until it didn't. You know, you're up 48-32 in the third quarter. You want to run the clock because the last thing, I mean, we would be sitting here wondering, golly, if they'd have just kept on playing and gave Douglas so many possessions and then it turned into a comeback that way, you'd say, should they have, slowed it down? And at the same time, though, I wonder how much kind of slowing it down and trying to milk some clock took away from their aggressiveness because, man, they were awesome in the third. Didn't seem like they could miss and really attacking. And then once Douglas decided to start pressuring, it seemed like that was the change in the game. The defense from Douglas, Weatherford trying to milk some clock a little bit on certain possessions. And next thing you know, Douglas started hitting some threes, ended up 8 of 16 from behind the arc, and a bunch of those came in that third quarter run, a couple of steals that led to layups, and next thing you know, it was tight. tight game down to the end. Obviously ended up going into overtime, and Douglas wins 72-69 in overtime over the Weatherford Eagles. Second straight year that Weatherford hoists the silver ball instead of the gold one.
Bummer. I was fortunate enough. I left. I wanted to get home, and I was riding through Weatherford, so I was able to pick up, you know, that low band FM frequency, able to pick up and hear the very start, and then they started off with a bang. Like first 8 points came from Rareman, I think, and it. So I thought, this is their year, man. They're gonna run away with this, like they have pretty much all season long with their games that they've been in. But Douglas able to, and I was able to get home and watch the overtime, and everything happened like you said. So it's just so close, and like our man Jeremy said, I found myself rooting for Weatherford, you know, and you would like to see the teams out here win them, but just because of that story was, you know, of how long they played together. I'm a big fan of that, and how their season ended last year. So them to get back into that game and to maybe get over that hump, bring home that gold ball, and then do it against the team that they lost it to last year. I was rooting for them, and I hate to see them go out like that. But, yeah, I tell you what, that's a heck of a run that senior group put together.
Whoa. There's just one senior.
Oh, one senior. My apologies. Yeah. I keep forgetting that part, too.
Yeah, Rareman is the only senior.
I keep thinking that they're seniors because they played together for so long.
Yeah, not yet.
Yeah.
They still got one more run in them next year.
Yeah, they're not done then, yeah.
With the majority of that group. Rareman graduates, but everybody else will be back again a year from now to try to, you know, a third time's a charm maybe for the Eagles. And, man, it just – you know, Nixon was awesome. I do think that he exerted so much energy. It felt like he was maybe wearing down just a little bit at the end. He still had 26 and 15. I mean, that's a heck of a performance on that stage.
I don't mean to be nitpicky, but you talk about wearing down the free throws at the end.
He missed the one.
He looked tired.
Yeah, he did. And he was, you know, you could tell he was trying to, you know, tuck in his shirt, you know, just give him a chance to totally catch his breath and get ready. The one time it worked, he knocked down both in the first of the overtime period, but then he missed the one that it didn't cost them the game or anything, but it was one that if he'd have made it, then it's still tied, and, you know, things may work out differently. On the other side, Jaden Nickens with 22 for Douglas, obviously the Millwood transfer. Was their leading scorer for the Trojans. But, man, it was one of those, I mean, for literally 365 days, that's the game everybody wanted to see when they walked out of that building last year. And it worked this year. You know, sometimes it doesn't happen. You know, we thought we might see Fort Cobb and Calumet again on the boys' side. That didn't happen. This one it did, and it absolutely lived up to every bit of the hype that you wanted it to. It was a fantastic game. And just that Weatherford just couldn't make one extra shot there in regulation to win the game. And I don't know about you, but when it did go to overtime, I felt like it's probably not a good time. Just the way that the third end of the third, fourth quarter went, it just felt like that Douglas was going to win once it got to overtime. The last game of the season at the Big House anyway, Dayton Forsyth and Dale, 36. They finished back-to-back-to-back state title winners and to me cement themselves with the run that they've been on through the years, and then now to culminate it with the senior year that was as good as they were. This puts them in my mind way, 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 way at the top, if not at the very, very top of kind of the smaller schools' teams of all time.
When I saw them with my own eyes, I was able to see them, not just the opening round, I was able to see them with my own eyes and then watching them in the semis and then yesterday or Saturday. And I keep trying to think of a better boys team. I mean, in recent memory, I can't think of one that I've seen. Can you? Because and it's easy to go back to those really good teams that had a really good player on it, like the Griffin brothers, Blake, obviously, and then you know, there's the Keaton Page teams and the Rodney Clark, and there's always that one, you know. But this team, like, was something that we agreed on was, even if you take Forsythe off that team is still probably winning it all. They just seem like such a well-put-together team. And I can't think of – I'd have to sit down and do my homework and try to remember seeing a team that's – it's hard to think of a better team. I know that's a risky thing to say, but I can't think of a better boys team that I've seen in person.
Yeah, I mean, especially for, a 2A down, 3A down. I mean, you think Fort Cobb had the great run with Cameron and Kellen.
Yeah.
You know, all the way back clear to the early part of the 2000s there. But I think the thing that separates Dale from some of those other smaller school teams is the success that they had against the bigger schools. You know, winning the Tournament of Champions a year ago. Going up and excelling like they did in Illinois against, you know, teams from all over the country that are winning state titles in the biggest classes in their states. Hoover, Alabama, obviously being one of those for that. So I just it's hard to imagine someone because of both. They've had the dominance against their own class, you know, against their own size of schools. They've dominated like you think they would, but then they've also jumped up in class and been able to not only hold their own, but win at a level that I just cannot remember anybody being able to do for, you know, the run that they've been on for over the last 2 years. You know, 1 year when they win the tournament of champions, the next year they go up and they do what they did in that tournament, you know, out of state. It's unlike anything I can think of. Right now, and it's probably a little bit prisoner of the moment or recency bias.
That's what I'm trying to get off of that. I'm trying to get away from that.
But it is.
I can't think of one, and it, maybe the question won't be answered until next year. You know, I know someone said on the text line, I wonder what Forsythe's game's going to, how it's going to transition into the next level. Well, what if it's seamless? What if he is actually a contributor at the next level and really good, and what if this Dell team continues to win? So is it a testament of, well, the program is really good.
The
best programs in the state.
Oh, I think it's
and
that,
then,
too.
And then you get into that argument, well, which was the better Dell team, you know? Mm-hmm. Which, you know, and you see that in programs in all sports. Like, well, yeah, they always produce championship teams. Then you can go into, well, which one was the best one? You know, if you put this team against that team, who would win? But it's Edmondson's got that's an incredible program, incredible participation that it's unheard of at that level at 2A when you hear about how many are coming out to play basketball. And I think it's only going to get better because of this open transfer stuff.
Yeah, I think it just depends on how high a school you want to go to. I mean, does Kingfisher, do you compare those? You know, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
As far as them and Dale, it's really kind of similar, right? Because, you know, each team had a guy that ended up going to OU. You know, and so it's pretty hard not to think about, you know, Kingfisher and Bijan with Forsythe and Dale, but I feel like that Forsythe is as much as that Kingfisher team did, as much as Bijan Cortez did for Kingfisher, it seems like that Forsythe is a better player all around. He's better and more equipped for the college game than maybe Cortez was. And that could be the bias of it not really working out for him, like some people might have thought. But at the same time, once again, even in 4A, the competition that Forsythe has not only been able to play against but also shine above in his last, especially the last couple of years at Dale, Cortez didn't do that. You know, he just didn't, and Forsythe has been able to.
Well, when Forsythe, my final thought on him in this topic is that when he committed to OU and everyone was like, "Oh, right, they got him," and I thought I was a little bitter with how the Cortez thing played out at OU, and now he's over at Wichita State. I haven't checked on his numbers. I don't know how he's doing up there. I hope he's doing great, But I thought, well, this is fine. But we've already seen an example of a kid from a small school, smaller school, get to the next level, and it just doesn't work out. But now after seeing him play, I think it's going to work out. Just hope that hope he stays in Norman.
Yeah.
You know, it's always wide open, so you never know. But I think it is. He has a special attribute to him, and I think it will. And just question to you, pop quiz: who does he remind you of? Anybody come to mind? I had one player in mind.
Who?
Peyton Pritchard. Kind of a player like that. Someone asked me, who's he remind you of? Anybody? I said, I actually seen him. His game kind of reminds me of his, of Pritchard's game when he was at Oregon and now over at Boston.
Yeah, Monty said, I wish he would play for. Could be playing for Eddie Sutton. He's the perfect type of player. Here's the deal, and Dakota's right on the text line. If you're an OSU fan, don't quit on him yet, because have you seen the rumors going around on Twitter?
No.
Oh, there's a couple of sites that are saying Mosier to DePaul is done.
Really?
Does that affect?
Crazy, because Mosier was there to watch him play on Friday.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's not been confirmed on the OU side by any stretch of the imagination. But in the event that that's true, how much does that maybe open him back up?
Yep.
To somewhere else, and would Oklahoma State be a possibility, or is he just an OU guy and he'll play for whoever's there? That will be interesting to see if that is really a thing. We heard that about a month ago, and Porter,
he kind of shut it down.
He shut it completely down.
Yeah,
but it's still just one of those that's still
going.
He's kind of still being there. Is there smoke, or is that just people are trying to find a natural fit for him away from Oklahoma? And Chicago is clearly would be one of those places. I have a hard time believing it. As much as we get on OU and the fans and the commitment to basketball, go look at what DePaul's been doing. This ain't the 80s. and it's not even close with the rebuild and the job and the task that would be to try to turn DePaul into what I don't think it's ever getting back to what it might have been back, you know, in the 70s and 80s. That's over.
The one thing I've learned about the internet, especially social media, is everything on social media is a lie. It's not true, and I won't believe anything on social media until it's true. You know what I mean? So I always take that with a grain of salt. When things are trending, that doesn't make it true.
Right.
It just doesn't make it true. So take that for what it's worth, but until I see it, I'm not going to believe it.
Jeremy said the McGinnis teams back in the late
90s. Those are good ones.
Four in a row. I mean, D1 guys all over. And the Bachelor winner. That's correct. They were good. I saw those with my own eyes. Obviously, Stevie Clark and the Douglas teams will be up there with the accomplishments that they had. But once again, like I'm talking about, even those teams, and it probably wasn't as big a thing back then as it is now. But, you know, the going out of state, the playing, you know what I'm saying, the highest level of competition, even some of those, it just wasn't quite the same. That's what we've seen from the Pirates. Bethany back-to-back, that doesn't shock anybody whatsoever. I thought Lincoln Christian and actually Douglas, they both gave them better games than maybe what I would have thought was seeing Bethany with my own eyes and how athletic and how talented they were and will continue to be. I know they lose a couple of seniors, Marchinot and Zia Van headed OU, but they still have Lofton. They'll still have the other van. They still have Caton Donnelly. I think they had three or four already that were at 1,000 points, and three of those were juniors. So they Talia Van is the taller one. So they'll probably be there again next year.
Yeah.
Hovering around. Don't forget, I'll post that link to get involved in the Western Oklahoma Realty Bracket Challenge. It's going to be fun. Jordan won last year. The winner, we're going to have a little prize package, and it might involve a little extra something-something from Augusta. You never know.
Look at you.
Never know. So I'll be down there right after the Final Four, get back and dole out the prizes. Something to think about. Skinny on Sports is the group. Skinny on Sports - Western Oklahoma Realty. I'll send that link again. Put that link, post that link up on the Skinny on Sports Facebook page today. That way everybody can kind of just get in there. And then obviously on Sunday the brackets will be released. And then you can start making your picks before the first round on Thursday. I don't buy into the first round being Tuesday and Wednesday. I don't believe that.
No.
It's just not me. I'm not calling it the second round. I'm calling it the first round. In my opinion, you don't really make the tournament unless you get into the top 64. So, sorry, play-in teams. You losers of the play-in games, I don't consider you as a tournament team. Not going to do it because you didn't make it to Thursday. That's just me.
Totally agree.
Okay, so the you already mentioned open transfer. That's coming in July. I think you have till July the 15th to make your intentions known ahead of the following school year. The transfer portal is already working for one team, and it worked this weekend. Midwest City. The Bombers, state title winners in 5A boys. You know how many games they won last year?
10.
Six.
Six games.
They went from a six-win team a year ago to the 5A state champs this year. I know one of the players that came aboard, Carl Sean Young, he was at Newcastle last year. We saw him just almost burn the Pioneer Center down when he was out here. I think he had like 28 the first half. Against the Elks, inside, outside, slash, shoot, dunk, it didn't matter. He could do it all. I know he ended up there, and so that was obviously a huge help to the Bombers. So that's next year, as much as I kind of had to look ahead, and then I thought maybe we should wait till August till we figure out where everybody landed. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm dead serious about that. We always do in the – you know, the not-too-early college football stuff comes out immediately the next day after the title game, and that seems incredibly silly because they don't have any idea who the team's going to be.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
Until really, here in about a month, once the spring football is over and that all dies down with, you know there's going to be more people leaving because they see the writing on the wall maybe at their position at their current school. Then, go through spring ball and you go, oh, wait a minute. Never mind. I'm out here. I'm not doing this. So.
Yeah, it's hard to. But on the question, on the text line, do we believe the portal will affect Western Oklahoma schools? I feel like no. I think I've said that before. I think this is going to be more of a Oklahoma City, Tulsa, maybe Lawton thing. Because the proximity of the schools to each other, you wouldn't really have to move, right?
No, you don't have to move.
You don't have to move. And there's some schools where you can, if you had to move, you can just move one block to the north, south, east, or west, and you're in their district and you're good to go. But and now you don't even have to do that. So I think we'll see more movement there with those area schools. I think out here, again, broken record, but I've said this before, I think there's too much loyalty. I think there's, your dad went to this school, your granddad, your aunts and uncles went to this school. Why would you go away from it? So I think there's that, a lot of pride, a lot of school pride still involved out here in Western Oklahoma. So I don't think it'll have much of an effect to the smaller schools in this outside of the metro area.
Yeah, that's the one question I would have.
You're going to see it, but it's not going to be drastic.
You've got people that play together in the summer. If we're talking basketball, yeah. From different a bit. Yeah, okay, so that. But how do you decide
what school,
which one to go to? Right. I think there's always going to be, let's say you've got one from three different places. Everybody's going to want it to join us here instead of go there. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's going. And here's another thing that I think you have to as the administration part of this. And I know there are certain schools around Oklahoma where you would think would really benefit from something like this that don't want it because they like where they're at as far as classification wise. You think of schools around the metro because it's kind of who we see as far as Elk City goes, you immediately go to the Tri-Cities area. Well, one of those doesn't do it like the other two. One of those doesn't necessarily take transfers, and that's Tuttle. The others will. And the others may not only do it, but also see themselves in a different classification. Whereas Tuttle's not really, they don't do that. I know Washington's a lot the same way. Washington would feel like a perfect place to really be able to benefit from some of this. They don't want to, you know, because you can't just choose. Okay, that's the whole thing. You can't just choose the athletes. You have to, if you're going to take them, if you're going to take them being any transfers, you take them all, and you can't put them at the top of the list, right? So that's where I wonder with schools and how they want to navigate these waters of how open they want to be to it, I guess, is where I would go with that. I mean,
another angle to this is you talk about a lot of players in the summer playing with each other and they potentially can't decide what school they want to go to. Keep in mind, someone has to coach them. And it might turn into, well, that coach who coaches us coaches at this school. Let's all go to that school.
Well, that's possible too. We literally saw that
exactly
with Douglas and Jaden Nickens and playing for Stephen Alexander,
so this who's
AAU coach.
This could affect hirings, you know.
Well, okay, so let's – well, I mean, let's – this the hire that was made at what I'm about to say wasn't done for that reason. But I think there is one school out here that has a huge advantage if it comes down to that. And it's Clinton and the Lady Reds.
Oh, yeah.
Because two is already, you know, he was that before he's this. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. With his Ravens program.
Yes.
He's developed some really good, some state champions, players, girls players. And you're right. Those girls might say, hey, I'll trade the Ravens jersey for a Red Tornado jersey.
Right. I mean, that's
stay with coach too.
Yeah, that's not, like I said, he was
that's
that
not the intention of their hire. He was a Clinton guy. He's born and raised there, but
it just happens to just be that's happened. The case though. Yeah. If that's kind of how it's decided, I from certain different people and certain kids wanting to transfer, but that could definitely be something to watch and see if that's the way it goes or if it's something different.
Which did you catch? You mentioned too, and that great family over there. Of athletes over there at Clinton. Did you see that they honored at the halftime of that game?
I heard.
The 1964 state champion Clinton basketball team, men's basketball team.
Yes, I heard you guys talking about
it. And they were pretty much all there outside of a couple that have passed away and one that had knee replacement surgery and was still in the hospital recovering from that. But all three were represented by spouses or siblings or kids. So it was really, really special to see. Pretty cool.
That's one of the things that always happens through those two weekends.
Yeah, they all
is you see different, you know, 50, 40 year anniversaries of teams.
That was a 60?
64.
So 60 years, right? And you know what? They won it in 65 too. So I wonder if they're going to come back next year.
They got their one shot. Maybe somebody else.
They had the trophy there and well represented. Even the manager was there on that team.
Very cool.
Was there. And
very
that was cool. That was, I felt fortunate. Being from Clinton, I thought, I didn't even know they were doing that until I got in the building and I saw that is cool. Because I saw a buddy of ours, Justin Jefferson, there. Hey, man, what are you doing here? And he told me what was going on. I was like, wow, well, that's cool. And two was there and his dad. And, you know, he has family. I think his granddad was on that team. So that's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's always
local
nice
stuff there.
Yeah, it's a lot of times we see that and we don't have any idea who they are.
Yeah.
You know, to be there to have an opportunity to know who some of those people are. Very cool. Very, very, very cool. All right, any last words, high school basketball wise? I think we can look ahead tomorrow.
Yeah, at least locally.
To next year.
Yeah. Yeah, we can.
Kind of what we think, Mike.
We have
who we see coming, who's still going to be there, that kind of thing. Gosh, that was an ugly scene yesterday in women's college basketball. Really, from the get go, it wasn't just the fracas that really wasn't a very good scene. The entire game, it was ugly, and it was allowed to get out of control, and then eventually it spiraled completely out of control. it looks like the only people that aren't going to be suspended for the first round of the NCAA tournament for both of those teams are the five on the floor. So they're going to have to play five on, you know, only five because of the ejections and whatnot. It's just, you know, there's a lot of eyeballs on women's college basketball right now that I don't think have been, courtesy of Caitlin Clark and that run and what she represents and you know, with Iowa and scoring all those points and breaking records. But then you see that, and I wonder how much something like that, because the truth is, I think a lot of sports fans, whether this is right or wrong, but I think they view women as above that. That's something that would happen in the men's game, not the women's, mm-hmm. because it just is the way it is. And the ugliness of that game, and you can tell those two teams do not like each other. But everything that happened before was still starting to be a little bit of a black eye. And I think that's unfair to say just because they're women, just because they're girls. But I think that's the way people think. They expect the women to be above that sort of behavior, and it just turns out competitors are competitors. It doesn't matter if they're a man or a woman.
Well, I don't condone it. I at any men's, women's, little league, NBA, WNBA, I think it's stupid. How that happened, anything like that happened. So I thought yesterday was just dumb, and I don't necessarily. The coaches' comments after the games. I think it's a culture thing, and with that, you should teach your players and coach your players. This is my opinion, and it might not be yours or anyone else here at the station, but I think the culture at South Carolina starts with their coach. The same thing at LSU. I get there's you want that competitive edge, but to think it's okay to go and push players and all that fracas that happened or whatever. I don't condone it. I blame the coaches. It's a culture thing. I'm not a fan of it. Play the game. Play basketball. Beat them on the scoreboard. You don't have to get physical like that. And I get they don't like each other, but it's just losing your cool like that, pushing players down, and a brother coming out of the stands. It's all a culture thing, and that starts with the head coaches.
Yeah, and I think what was wild is each of them's reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Each coach's reaction.
Their post-game reaction or just
yes.
on the court? On
the post-game yeah. reaction. Don Staley was incredibly apologetic and said that doesn't belong in the game. Kim Mulkey basically said, whatever.
Yeah.
I wish they'd have done that to Angel. I mean, you know,
that's...
I think that Don Staley has taken some from us, and rightfully so, with some of the crap that she's pulled, most notably the BYU thing. That turned out to be a complete farce. That was just right. a made-up race-baiting type of issue back then. But in her defense, at least for yesterday, she had the right words to say. And it was just what you just said. There's no place in the game for that. It got out of hand. It shouldn't happen. And apologize. And I think she gets what I'm saying as far as there's so many different eyeballs that haven't been on the sport. That was uncalled for, and that
turns people away. I don't want my kids seeing. You know, when women's basketball is on, I'm a girl dad, and I don't mind my kids watching mm-hmm. women's basketball. I want them to see that. Softball, too. But I don't want them to see that.
Yeah, and that was exactly what she did, what Don Staley said. And that's the right thing to say, unlike Kim Mulkey, who, yeah, Leland's right, blamed the officials, blamed everybody but her own players and herself,
yeah, herself.
For allowing like you said, the culture and that behavior to spiral out of control. I mean, Angel Reese was a mad woman. I mean, pulling hair and, you know, elbows were thrown. It wasn't just that part of it. Mm-hmm. That's what everybody's going to remember. But if you would have watched the different, you know, there's clips out there showing, you know, what led up to it yeah. throughout the entirety of the game. You know, the one official just ran away. I'd love to know what they're taught to do there. I would doubt it's you know, there's three out there.
Well, we
are
one.
Two needing to be involved and trying to break it up, and another one watching to rule, or are you supposed to be in there breaking it up and then you go back to the monitor, at least in college? that you have that capability of, okay, that one all came off the bench, they're ejected or what have you. You know, what are they, were they taught? Because the two officials were right there and the other one just kind of walked out. Like, nope, that's not my job.
She was like, I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
I'm out of this.
And you know, I just wonder if that is what's supposed to happen. Is that just kind of an instinct type thing? Just how that all operates. But obviously it was not a good look. Final thing, bracketology. Looks like Big 12 still with 9 in. I think Wednesday's game, it's not a winner you're in for Oklahoma. I think it is for TCU. If TCU can beat OU, I think they're in, and that'll be the 9th team. OU a 9 seed, according to Joe Lunardi. They're going to be a 9 or a 10, unless they make a good run. You know, if they beat TCU and then somehow would upset Houston, could that push them off of that 8-9? You know what I mean? I don't know if that's enough, if they even need to get to the finals of the Big 12 tournament to be able to push up away from, you know, 8-9-10 to get to a 7. I think that that would almost have to happen, where you get multiple top 15 type wins in the Big 12 tournament. But as we said after the Cincinnati game, I think Oklahoma, you don't see them in the last four anymore. They're not in the last four in on basically anybody's bracketology. And so I think Oklahoma is safely in, even though they lost to Texas over the weekend. And then TCU, I think TCU is kind of the bubble team now. It was Texas. Texas has done a lot down the stretch to try to get themselves off of that bubble, and I think they have. And so now it's to the point of whether or not TCU can be the 9th team from the Big 12. They beat OU, I think they're in.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, we'll see what OU can do if they put together a run here. Interesting if they can't get that rematch with Houston, how that transpires. Because they played Houston pretty good, obviously, but and one bad bounce, and they probably send that thing to overtime at least. But I'd like to see how that, if that was a fluke or if it's just a matchup thing, if OU plays really good with them. And health, it's contingent on health if they come in a little healthier. Unlike they weren't really healthy against Houston and still took them down the wire.
There you go. Officials taught to get players separated. The rule change let the coaches leave the bench chair to fight. Used to, they couldn't, but that's a big part of it. I didn't figure they were supposed to just, you know, kind of turn their back and walk away like that one did. But
well,
I wonder
if it's just to protect themselves, too. If you
well,
think
sure.
Someone's just upset with the officials, think, well, I'm a target here. I got to get out of here.
No. Yeah, that I assume you're supposed to be in there getting it calmed down,
right,
and getting it stopped, and then figure out the ruling later.
Yeah.
Okay, that'll do it. What a great day. Welcome, Boomtown Grill.
That'll be
the March Madness headquarters, right?
100%, yeah.
On Thursday, opening round, 50 Cent wings, TVs galore.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Hey, good job, Texas, holding on that number one ranking in softball. You go and lose to Houston.
Everybody have a great Monday.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.